I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Abby Cox. And in this episode, we had some new adventures in podcasting. We had the friends ask me some questions today. We're really excited. We have some additional insights, and I am excited for you to listen. This was a ton of fun to record. All right, let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We are here today with Kirsten, our friend. And the last couple of weeks, Kirsten, you guys asked me all the questions.
Yes, we did. You asked. We knew we were going to mess that up. I don't know. Sometimes just whatever. It's been a long day of lots of meetings, and we're really tired when we're recording this.
So
it's going to be a little crazy in here. So the last couple episodes, you got to ask us about stuff, and we left the studio, and we're like, okay, no, we need to flip the script. So today, First Lady, you're in the hot seat, and we're going to find out about you.
I'm ready. Bring it on.
I'm excited. And I don't know if people really know, KSL is so wonderful to host us, and they've given us this producer that we begged and begged and begged for back, Josh, who we had in our previous podcasting life. We really do. But they are also still being really careful about COVID, so there can only be one co-host in the studio with you at a time, which is why we're doing this kind of this weird way. But I'm stoked because I get to start by asking you whatever questions I want, and then the other co-hosts can ask whatever's left over.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah,
but,
let's go. Let's do it. Okay, I want to start with this question. You open your show with "Let's get proximate," and I just want to talk a little bit more about like what does that mean to you? Where does it come from? Why does it matter?
So, several years ago, I first read the book "Just Mercy" by Brian Stevenson. And it was actually very life-changing for me because it was, you know, growing up in a place in Utah, but even more so rural Utah, it's pretty homogenous. You don't get a lot of people of color. You don't get a lot of differing political or religious backgrounds. And so me reading about sort of racism up close and sort of the history of juvenile justice and the issues that are there regarding race, you know, through Brian Stevenson's experiences, it was just, the book is so powerful. I know there was a movie made a couple of years ago.
Right.
Again, I would just say read the book. Make sure you read the book.
The book is always better than the movie.
The movie is good.
Matilda.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Back to getting proximate.
but he shares lots of stories. And again, I can't say all of them. But the gist of the idea is that when we hear people's actual lived experiences, it opens our minds to an empathy that we maybe didn't know we could have. And I guess that's where I'm at. And the more I talk to people that have different experiences than I do, that have a different lived life, you know, than I do, it really opens my heart to people that may have, and changes my heart and changes my mind in a lot of things I thought I believed about people. And so I want people to experience that too. I want everyone to experience the idea of getting proximate to somebody that's different.
And you want to bring that to this podcast?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so bringing people here that have a different lived experience, and so that all the listeners can get proximate, even though we're not physically proximate, we're hearing people's experiences. I think it's a way to bring human connection in a world that is craving real connection with one another.
Yes, yes, yes. I completely agree. And I will say, I think reading Just Mercy is sort of like a required reading if you're going to be a friend of the Abby and Spencer Cox family, because we're just constantly talking about it. Now, I have to say, from a personal standpoint, like, it kind of wrecked me growing up where I did as well. It opens your mind to so many things. And I think it's really great that ever since then, and even before then, y'all want to spend your time getting proximate with people. And I think you get a lot of opportunities to do that in the political space. It's not so, you know, binary as like one person's on one side of the aisle and one person's on the other side of the aisle. Like, there's so much just beauty and diversity of thought, even, you know, here in Utah, in a place that maybe you wouldn't think of. And actually, I want to talk about that a little bit, too. I think it's been interesting, even just from like my political staffing standpoint, to get to meet and talk to people who are different than I am and have it open my mind. You all got to go to every single place in this state, every city in the state on your campaign, and you got to meet a lot of really fantastic people. How did that, you know, kind of tour open your mind to all of this and help you to get proximate with people?
Yeah, it's, I know it's not really feasible for everyone to do that, but frankly, it would be awesome.
Bowled you over. Yeah.
And it's exhausting. But you know, I would love that experience for everyone. And I guess also with this pod is we want to collect those people that we listen to and we heard their stories and bring them on the pod so you can kind of get a little taste of what we saw throughout the state. And I guess one of the most meaningful experiences we had was we did service projects, and yes, some of them were really small. Some of it was just planting a tree here or there. It was painting a door on a building or whatever it was. But some of them were a little bit bigger. And one of the ones that really stuck out was there was a couple of children in an elementary school in Price whose siblings had been victims of suicide. And the elementary school playground was literally right next to the cemetery where their siblings were buried. And there was a chain link fence, but it was just every time those children came out to play in the playground, they were reminded daily of that trauma in their life and that grief. Goodness. And so it was the community that said, you know what, we'd like to come together, and if you would help us do the service project, we want to put the privacy slats in the fence so that every time these children come out, it's not like a constant reminder that they can just be children, that they can just play with their friends without that constant reminder. And so we had probably at least 200 people from the community come out to join us for that service project. And again, that's a story. People are dealing with suicide. We have one of the highest, we live in the suicide belt,
right? Yeah.
And it's a tough, tough issue. And there's so many people in this state that are dealing with that very thing. But for a child, you know, if we can surround that child with love and just lift his burden just a little bit, then I think we've gotten proximate and that means something.
I love that. Just really, really cool to hear. You know, I wasn't with you on the campaign trail. I was otherwise engaged being ethically careful. And I think it's just so cool because those stories and those experiences have really, really stayed with you and shaped you. I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing. Can you give us a picture of like what was a Saturday at the Palmer family household in San Pete County like growing up? Like, you have crazy backstory. I mean, it's fantastic.
I know. And it's, I always think like, I feel like I lived 100 years ago. It's like,
I think you kind of did.
My experiences remind me of sort of that. It's, yeah, I just was it was a time long ago that not a lot of people have still experienced. In rural Utah, there's still people that experience this. And a lot of my family still live on ranches, and my brothers are still working on my family ranch. But I grew up in a family of 10 kids. Woo-hoo. I was number 5, so right in the middle. So, yes, came with all the middle child stuff, like, you know, like extreme middle child.
Like, did you get your own toothbrush?
Barely. Maybe.
Your own socks?
Once a year. We would, like, okay, so a typical, so say we're, you know, so it's a typical Saturday. Let's pick a typical Saturday in February.
Okay.
And we're lambing, which means, you know, we're running about 200 head of sheep.
I really didn't know that was a thing before I knew you. So,
lambing is when, you know, you have these corrals in the barn, and there's each morning the ewes are birthing their babies, and usually there's twins. And so you gather those up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you put them in a little about 4x4 pen so that they get their sheep are not real bright. So you have to get them together so that they just have them and their lambs, and they make sure they're nursing and they're eating and everything. And then, so you have all these pens that, and then you're feeding and watering all these sheep in the pens, and then you're sort of taking groups of 10 and putting them together so they get used to being with them. And then you know, several weeks after that, it's out to the pasture. And so this is what's happening early in the morning. And then you're cleaning out pens. You're doing this stuff all day long. Saturday was, and then you came in, we would come in after doing all the whole long list of farm work that my parents had.
Did all the children help?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's 7 girls. We were all in there. My brothers are older. They were number 1 and number 3, and then it was all us girls. And then when we got to the end of the day, we'd come in the afternoon usually, and then that's when we would clean our rooms. My mom was like, she ran such a tight ship that, like, we had charts. You cleaned your room. You made you changed your sheets on Saturday. I mean, it was like deep clean, bathrooms, everything. And then my mom would stay up and like mop the kitchen floor like till like midnight.
Wow.
And do all the cleaning of the whole house after she'd been out.
So she was childrening. You were lambing, yes. And she was childrening.
Yes. But she was also lambing. And my dad was actually got really sick when I was in middle school. And so a lot of that fell on my mom and the rest of us to actually pick up the pieces on the farm.
What did you love about that?
Not a lot.
Wrong
if
question,
I'm being
Kirsten.
Totally honest. No, there's moments, obviously, you know, with my sisters, and it's, I guess what I loved about it is when the work was done and we could play. And so those were the times I loved actually playing sports. That was my outlet. I loved being gone to sports. So I wasn't working at home, but yeah, those are fun things to do.
Oh, I love it. What a crazy fun upbringing you had. I know that Jeanette Bennett is like going to be knocking down the door for her chance to interview you here in a minute. But so excited to get to know you more through these questions. And I just want to say, I think I called you like rough and tumble last episode. And I actually really stand by that. that's not, I think I said like whatever the next level up from, but like, I think you just like proved my point, and I just want to point that out. But I will like advocate my seat right now and let one of our other ragtag co-hosts come in.
No, I think that's fantastic. You know, tromping through the manure in the corral is definitely rough and tumble. So we'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
We are back with Jeanette Bennett. We're going to do a reverse interview, and
I
you get a turn to ask me the questions.
I'm so
this week.
Excited. I could talk to you for hours, so I'm excited to ask you a few questions.
And we have.
Yes, we have. We had a real long talk on your sidewalk one day.
That was fun.
That was great. So tell me, what's something in your life that's turned out better than you thought it might?
So this is an interesting one. Because, and maybe it's a little, I don't know. Okay. So it's a little personal information, and maybe we won't get into the whole story at this moment.
Okay.
But about 11 years ago, I decided, not decided, but I felt impressed or you know, I don't know what the word is, but my sister-in-law and I had had many conversations, and we were very close, and she has cystic fibrosis and was unable to have another child because her first child very, very nearly killed her.
And this is Spencer's sister?
Spencer's sister, yes. And I would love to have her on the pod, and we can
that would be
get
awesome.
Into this. Cause she's one of those really fascinating people that everybody will love. And she... Anyway, was just feeling really compelled to have another baby and just didn't think that was even possible for her to do. And through a lot of deep conversations and just some real spiritual moments for the both of us, we felt like I would be a surrogate for her. And so
amazing.
Really a tough decision and really a tough journey for both of us and for all of our families, and really apprehensive about what it would mean for my own kids.
Right.
And, you know,
it's a lot to think about with
in that.
That
moment, you know, what does it mean for my body? What does it mean for my mental state? And how does one do such a thing?
Right. It's not an everyday decision.
No. And again, requires both couples just really being in tune with what they feel like is supposed to happen. And so 10 years later, we have little Lawson who's just
sweet.
A joy. And, you know, so that obviously I wasn't sure how that would turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of emotional tough things
I'm
that
sure.
I went through.
I'm sure all
tough
along
times,
the way.
But it really did turn out amazingly and just a life experience. It's really hard to describe,
but
turned out really well.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I would love to do a whole, wouldn't it be fun to do a whole episode on your journey
yeah.
and have her with us? That would be so great.
Yeah.
The first time I heard about this, I was emceeing Utah Philanthropy Day, and your husband as Lieutenant Governor was there. And he worked that story into his speech. And I'm pretty sure none of us in the room had ever heard this story before.
Well, and I remember him coming home and said,
yeah.
So.
So I did this thing in front of a lot of people.
You did what now?
Yeah. But I remember getting, and the room was silent listening to this story. And we were all touched, and he was touched in telling it. And I remember getting up to the microphone afterwards and saying something along the lines of, as if we didn't already love Abby.
Oh.
Enough. We now know something even more special about her. So I love hearing that it turned out better than you expected, because that's a big one. That's a big story. So thank you for sharing that. All right. What kind of mother did you think you were going to be? And what kind of mother are you actually?
I kind of love this question, because I think most of us as parents are the best parents in the world. Before we have kids.
Exactly. We know it all. I mean, we've got
the
answers. We have all the patience.
And so the kind of mother I thought I would be, my mother was very strict, very, she had to be, she had 10 kids. She, you know, she had to just, everything had to be just so, or you'd lose your mind.
And you're the oldest, is that right?
I'm the fifth
of 10. Oh, you're
the fifth.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right in the middle.
So she was, yeah, she, but... So I assumed I'd be a little less militant, but really my kids would be so much better.
I love those ideals at the beginning, you know.
And the mother that I really am, I guess, would differ from the first child to the last child.
Absolutely.
I think we become very different parents. I was having this conversation with my daughter the other night. She was really lamenting the fact that we are old and we are old parents and that she's stuck with us because her older brother is graduating and she still has 4 years at home with us. And so
4 years in the mansion.
Yes.
As the only child.
Yes. She was getting really, you know, really lamenting this fact. And I said to her, honey, you really should appreciate this because I was a much more uptight mother with Gavin, our oldest, than I am with you. I promise you, you should.
I'm sure. Bedtimes have changed. Rules have loosened.
Much more
age
relaxed.
You have to be to get a phone changes.
But although she did say, you let him get Snapchat and you let him do stuff. And I said, well, because I didn't know enough then. That was, it was all brand new. That stuff was all brand new. And I said, I know better now because she gets really mad. I won't let her do social media at all.
So in some ways you're probably more strict and maybe in other ways less.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would say. And you learn what's important and what you should just let go. And so. Yeah,
I actually think being a mother in your later years, and by later I mean 30s.
Yes. Yeah. Utah later years.
Yes. It is a really cool feeling because you know that it doesn't really matter if the bow matches the skirt or whatever.
Yes.
You know, those things
yes.
just don't matter. But just having fun, making memories, shaping them into who they are, those things matter.
Yeah. Well, and having my only daughter be last, I used to lament the fact because I just think she would have just made my life. She would have babysat the boys. She would have just run the show. But now I think about it, I'm like, now that we're going through 14-year-old together, I was like, nope. I was too uptight to do a 14-year-old to be my first.
So it worked out just as it should.
I think so. Yep.
I love that. What's something you could talk about for hours?
Besides, kids and family, obviously those are, kids. We talk about our kids all the time, but I would say horses.
I love that.
That's something that people don't know. Obviously we just talked earlier about my experiences on the farm, but my experiences, riding a horse taught me so much, taught me to use my voice, to be in charge, to be powerful in my own way and to not be intimidated mm-hmm. by something that seems like it could be very intimidating.
Right.
So love horses.
I love that. I know you were with Bridle Up Hope recently and they focus on some of those principles you just talked about. And I love how they've incorporated.
What was so fascinating, again, I say this because of the experience I just had there, they articulated that to me, and growing up with horses, I learned all those lessons. But I don't think I really knew what I was learning.
Right. They weren't
until
in vinyl
they
letters on your wall.
Articulated it to me, and I said, "Oh my gosh,
exactly.
yes, exactly
what you said."
Yeah.
Oh, that is such a cool program, and I love that you could talk about that for hours. Okay, so similarly, if you could have a magic wand and fix anything, one thing in Utah, what would you use that magic wand to fix?
I think I would fix empathy. I think I would fix the children in our state learning empathy so that when they are the adults in this state, that we don't have the contempt and the vitriol and the inhumane way that we treat each other.
That's powerful.
I just think if every child in this state grew up with empathy and love for those who may have express a different opinion or come from a different place than they do, mm-hmm. I think this world would absolutely be a beautiful place to live in.
That would be an excellent use of a magic wand. I remember learning that in kindergarten and in preschool, learning empathy was even more important than learning their letters in the alphabet, because if you look at who ends up in prisons, it's people who lacked empathy in a lot of cases, that could commit a crime because their empathy wasn't where it could have been. So I love that you would fix that problem. Abby, I could talk to you for hours.
I know.
I wish we had time for a few more questions, but we have future episodes. We'll have lots of time to dive into things.
We will. And thank you, Jeanette. This has been absolutely fun for me. We'll be right back. And we are back with our other friend, Dawn Ramsey, the busiest lady in the state, on meetings while she's potting.
Yeah, don't tell. Do not tell.
We won't say that. Which meetings.
She's not actually in a meeting right now while she's recording.
Just kidding.
Podcast.
Disregard that. We'll edit that out.
She jumbly let me. It's good. It's okay. I am so happy to be here with you. It makes me happy to see you
this is so fun.
Day and age where we're hoping to get to start seeing more people. I'm very excited about that, and I'm thrilled to see you.
I know. I told my daughter a while ago, I said, she and I decided that we kind of need therapy, like re-entry therapy. Uh-huh. Like, you see pictures of, like, a room packed full of people with no masks on from, like, years ago, and you're like,
Gosh, actually, we just experienced that over the weekend, and we were excited to be able to go get ice cream, and we were celebrating. My son had some exciting news, and so we went to celebrate, and we went for ice cream, and it was the first time that we've been around that many people, because people could be in there at every table. You know, the tables didn't have to be quite as distanced, and that is great news, but it was a little... we haven't been around this many people at one time
unnerving.
In a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of unnerving.
Yeah.
It's going to take some real... I'm not kidding. I think I need therapy to get back in.
Adjustment. Yeah. It's a good adjustment to get to make.
Oh, absolutely.
Very excited about that.
So fun.
Okay. Well, I'm so excited to get to ask some questions to you.
Yay.
You're the one who I am excited for the listeners to get to know the most. There's so much, so much about Abby. And so the first question I have for you is, what made you decide to go into special education?
So this is such a great question because it's such a passion of mine, and it's such a great story. So I'll age myself here, but when I was very, very young, so first starting school, like kindergarten, in that area, there was not a law for inclusion for kids with disabilities in our schools. And I think the law passed shortly thereafter. I do remember in second grade that three of the kids with disabilities, specifically with Down syndrome, from our community, we were the biggest town in the county, and so they put them all in our school. I think that was the only place in our poor district that they had the resources. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they were, and they were all in my grade. And when you're in a small rural school, you're connected with them really intimately. And so I went all through school with these kids in my class with me. And they are beautiful souls. They're still my friends. I see my one friend, John, he works at Terrell's. I haven't seen him for a while, but Emma Kate would say to me always when we go in there, Mom, you know, your friend John, there's your friend John.
Like, that's awesome.
I love my friends with disabilities. And so growing up with that, that's where I connected and thought this is really, really where I want to be. And so, you know, beautiful special ed program at Utah State, one of the top special ed programs in the country. And so I love my time there, and my professors were amazing. So that's what got me there.
That's awesome. That is not something I even knew. Like, this is a question I did not know the answer to. So I love that. Thank you. Okay. Where do you see yourself in 20 years?
I see myself laying on a beach
taking
somewhere.
A nap. Catching up for all the lifetime of sleep you have not had.
Yes. No, you know, Spencer and I, after our public service, which I hope is not 20 years from now, but somehow before that. But I think in 20 years, you know, I would love to have a whole bunch of grandkids. I would love to serve LDS missions together with my husband. I would love to, you know, be in a spot where I'm just enjoying my family and not taking on the issues and problems of the world.
I want that for you in 20 years.
On a beach.
Right. With a gaggle of grandkids.
Yes.
I love that. That's great. Can I come visit?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. What is one thing that you wish every Utah knew about your husband, Governor Cox?
That's interesting. I guess, you know, and especially after this year or two of just probably the most difficult, the most arduous and exhausting 2 years of our lives, and especially the last year, running a statewide campaign for governor in the middle of a pandemic. He's basically running pandemic. Austin Cox, our campaign manager, was running campaign, and it was so tough because, you know, if you succeeded, that, you know, the opponents didn't want you to succeed, which meant the state was succeeding. So that was a really frustrating moment. And I guess I just remember, you know, on both sides, people were angry. There wasn't enough being done. There was people that were angry. There's too much being done. There are, you know, and it's just, there's nobody's happy and everybody's anxious because they're in the middle of this really unknown, right, scary moment in all of our lives. And he would come home at night, just sheer exhaustion. Just, I've never seen him. He wasn't sleeping. I've never seen him like that. It was really tough. And I guess what I would want people to know about him is that I remember him saying, this would be really a lot easier if I didn't care. And he deeply cares. He deeply cares about humans. He deeply cares about people that are suffering. And, you know, I guess sometimes you don't get the full picture of someone. You only see what that little snippet on the news or wherever it is. But to see the deep anguish that he was having during this whole time, because he's trying to make decisions that save people's lives, that save people's health, but also saves their jobs, right, saves their education. And so it was such a heavy, heavy, and still is a very heavy, heavy burden. But the reason it's heavier is because he does care so deeply.
I love that. And I actually anticipated that would be your answer. That is exactly the answer I thought you would give, is that he cares so much. I know that's true. I know, yeah, that's true. And I'm glad that you shared that with people. I think a campaign or inflammatory information that gets out and spreads like wildfire does not tell the story of who someone is.
No.
And I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
And that they're a human. And I think we all have to realize that, like, assign people. I tell my kids this all the time. Assign people the best intentions. Mm-hmm. If we're looking for the good in people, we're going to find it.
Awesome. Agreed. That's so great. Thank you. Okay. I want to know, if you could talk to any one person in history, who would you choose and why?
Okay. So I love this question too, because I don't know if many people know this, but I have a namesake, and I was named after Abigail Adams. Abigail Adams was, you know, a central figure in the founding of our country. And I was born in 1976. Now I'll really, you can add up my age now. It's no secret. But that was the bicentennial year for our country.
Right.
And so it was a big celebration. And I was born in 1976. So my mom named me Abigail after Abigail Adams. And not only did she name me that, but she always bought books, biographies she would give me to read about Abigail. And probably there were many, many more women like her. But because she was such a prolific letter writer, and because she and John had this beautiful relationship where they, and because they were apart so much,
right,
that they wrote these letters back and forth, and she was kind of a woman before her time. I mean, she was powerful. She had a powerful voice. I mean, even in the time that she lived in, she talked about taking care of the women, and we're going to revolt if the laws don't reflect what we need and what we deserve. And so, I mean, she was really instrumental in making sure that women's rights were protected. But again, you know, lived in a time where there weren't a lot of women's rights. And so if I could sit down and chat with her, I think she would just be a fascinating person to connect with.
I love that. I love that. It's so fun. I'm so happy that people get the chance to know these things about you. And I think they're just going to, anybody who listens to this, love getting to know you. And hopefully at some point when we can all be together, get to know all of us, because part of the beauty of this is we think we're hilarious when we're all together.
Of course we do.
We think we have a great chemistry. And so we just hope that people enjoy this. But doing it this way is just, it's also fun too. It's different than we anticipated. But I love getting to talk one-on-one with you. Thank you
so much.
For
it's been so
sharing
fun.
How awesome you are. And letting us just ask anything. There were no bets are off on this. It was wide open. And so we just got to come up with our own questions.
I'm an open book. We'll be right back. And we are back with the party. We got Shelly here.
Woof, woof.
And she's got some, what have you got for me?
I've got kind of a fun story for you before we dive into some questions. So today, I was asked by a friend of mine to come to an elementary school in Weber County Municipal Elementary and speak to the fourth graders. And she asked if I would talk to them about our new governor and introduce him and his family and let them know, you know, what he's like and what he's about. And it was really, really fun. So I start out and I ask them the question, do they know what happened on January 5th this year? And they gave me some funny things. And then we finally got to the point that we got a new governor. What's his name? Then what's his wife's name? And I tell them, your name is Abby. What do we call Abby? We call her Abby. I said, well, if you're really good friends with her, you can call her Abby. I said, when I call her, I call her Abby. But sometimes when we're, you know, there's a title that goes with Mrs. Cox. I said, well, she probably doesn't want to be called Mrs. Cox. I said, actually, we call her the First Lady. And one girl in the room raises her hand and she goes, no, she's not the First Lady. Michelle Obama is the First Lady. So it was kind of fun. I got to explain what the First Lady was, that you were the First Lady of Utah and what that means, and then that Michelle Obama was the First Lady. But it was really fun. So anyway, you've got some stiff competition with Michelle Obama.
Yes, I do. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was cute.
Kids are the best.
Oh my gosh.
They are absolutely
so
the best.
Cute. So I did this true false thing with them about the governor, you know, and I would say, you know, true or false, the governor plays in a band, you know, and I just did some fun stuff. So at one point a girl raises her hand and she was like, so you mean to tell me our governor is a Spanish speaking crazy sock wearing farmer? I said, oh my gosh.
Perfect. We're putting that on his bio.
Perfect. Yes. So they were cute. They were fun. They had a lot of fun getting to know Governor Cox and the First Lady. And it was fun to be able to introduce you and tell you guys some fun stories.
I love being in schools. That seriously is, I miss it so much. I used to go in with my kids all the time and do groups. And
me too.
Like, they say the darndest things. They really do.
I know. It's cute. It's fun. So today I get to ask you the rapid fire questions, Abby.
Okay.
It's just quick get to know you questions that we're going to ask. We're going to go quick and I might come back to some of them. There might be a story behind one or two of the reasons. Okay. And then we'll see where it goes.
Okay. So, and I haven't seen these questions. So
you have no idea. And they're simple. They're easy. They're things like mountains or beach.
Beach.
Beach. Urban or rural?
Rural.
I knew that you were going to say that. Do you guys like to eat out or eat at home?
Oh, definitely eat out.
Eat out. Casual or dressy?
Oh, gosh. Like both? I don't know. Okay. I actually do like, you know, it is kind of fun to be dressed up. But yeah, who doesn't love to throw on your jeans and your hoodie?
Right, for sure. Truck or car?
Truck.
Snow ski or water ski?
Snow ski.
Summer or winter?
Gosh. Probably winter.
Okay. Steak or chicken?
Steak.
Hot dog or hamburger?
Hamburger.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Hard book or audible?
Audible.
Sandals or pumps?
Pumps.
Licorice flavor, red, black, or chocolate?
Chocolate, unless it's red vines. I like red vines.
Okay. Would you rather have more money or more free time?
Well, I've had a lot of free time lately, so I would take money.
always. Because I feel like money can buy free time. I don't know.
Sure.
Early riser or night owl?
I'm probably a night owl.
Facebook or Twitter?
Twitter. Definitely Twitter.
Fake or real Christmas tree?
Fake.
Flowers or golf balls?
Golf balls.
We'll come back to that one. Road trip or air travel?
Oh, gosh. God, I like both, but right now probably air travel.
Air travel. No kidding. Peppermint Patty or Lifesavers?
Lifesavers.
Okay. Girls' night out or date night?
Date night.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
Country or pop music?
Country.
Call or text?
Text.
Treadmill or road running?
Road running. I hate the treadmill.
Passenger or driver?
Oh, gosh. I'm a passenger a lot more lately, but I like to drive.
Water or soda?
Water.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Laying pipe or gardening?
Probably laying pipe.
Okay. Shopping or sporting event?
Sporting event.
Vacation or staycation?
Vacation.
Vacation.
As long as it's... So my sisters and I have this thing. I've had to teach some of my sisters this. Is like, there's a difference between a trip and a vacation. Like a trip is, you have kids, it's work, it's hard, you know, it's busy. A vacation is like, the number one thing is there are no kids. And it's just like chill and it's relaxing and it's fun. So
somebody asked me just the other day, where was your last vacation? And I said, to Arizona for Kai's baseball game. And they're like, that's not a vacation.
Not a vacation.
And I said, oh, it's not. And so they had to do the same thing, like especially like Arizona is not a vacation. I was like, it was to me. It was sunny and warm and there was baseball. So one of the questions, I knew most of your answers on this. So I felt pretty good about our friendship. I was like, I know what she's going to answer on most of these.
We can play that game, compatibility. Do you remember that?
Yeah, seriously. I was like, I know what she's going to say here. There might be one or two that might have surprised me. But I said, if she says shopping over sporting events, our friendship's over. So I was glad you said the sporting event.
For sure. You're
a sports girl, a Jazz girl.
I love a good ball game. I love to go to the Jazz. That's like my favorite thing. You and I have talked because I love to go to a baseball game.
Right.
I take my kids and they're like, this is boring. And I'm like, it's not supposed to be
right. It's just
crazy exciting. It's supposed to be like, it's the atmosphere. It's the sounds. It's the smells. It's the crack of the bat. I do have to say, we went to New York. Spencer's parents like took all the adult children to New York for like Christmas one year, like as a Christmas trip, not during Christmas, but like as a Christmas present. But we did like the red eye. And then like literally that afternoon, we got in that morning and like at noon or one or something, we went to a Yankees game.
Oh, you did. I'm jealous.
It was awful, actually.
Oh, it was like, awful?
Because well, like,
tired.
It was almost like an out of body experience because I don't sleep on planes.
Right.
So I am literally have been up like 30 hours and I'm sitting there like, It was, you know, like when you're that exhausted. And so you'd look down the row and all of us are like half asleep. And like, I'd just be drifting and all of a sudden you'd hear the crack of the bat and your eyes would open. And it was like, it's like Chinese water torture. It was like that torture where you like, they won't let you go to sleep.
Right.
And so it was like, I love a baseball game, but I do need a good night's sleep before
Not
I go.
Yankee Stadium. Okay, maybe you and I should go to Yankee Stadium again and just relive it.
Let's went to another Yankees game when we took Gavin back for a senior trip and went to New York and went to, because my husband loves the Red Sox.
They were
playing the Red Sox and it was pretty frightening, actually, because they're wearing Red Sox stuff.
And you're in Yankee Stadium.
And we're in Yankee
Red Sox
Stadium. And it wasn't Kansas anymore. They were like screaming obscenities like as we were walking out of the stadium, you know, because Boston was getting killed. And so they're walking out and it's like, they were screaming upset. I'm like, take off your shirt. Hide your hat. I'm so scared.
No more Red Sox pride. Should always have Red Sox pride, though. Always. So really quickly, before we wrap up our segment, Abby, I just wanted to ask you, when I first met you, one of the things that endeared me to you and that has endeared me to the governor was I heard him first when he was the lieutenant governor. And I think a lot of people in our state, that's where they were first introduced to him, was after the Orlando shooting. Mm-hmm. And he came out with his message. And then after, when I met you for the first time, I knew about you guys from the podcast. But one of the things I've been most impressed by you, and I want to know where you get that from and why, where it comes from, is how inclusive you are, Abby. Why is it so important for you and for the governor to, or where does that come from? You guys don't, you really have an ability to connect with people, gender, ethnicity, religion, you know, sexual orientation, none of that bothers you, that people are not exactly like you. And that was one thing that I was drawn to you by, because you and I, we don't have all of the same things like that in common, but it didn't matter to you that we were still going to be friends, even though we were different. Tell me where that comes from and why it's so important for you and Spencer to be inclusive to people who aren't like you.
Well, I honestly don't know that I can pinpoint maybe one place it comes from or one experience, but I would say there's a combination of a few things. First of all, Spencer and I grew up in different ways, even though we came from the same place. He came from a background of his parents were divorced. He was bullied. He had some childhood trauma. You know, he's a five aces kid. There's just some of that stuff. So when you've experienced some of that stuff, it really does change the way you look at people and connect with people and empathize with people. And so I think part of that, you know, obviously people's religious backgrounds can be the same and their faith traditions can be similar, and you can come out of it with different points of view. And for me, my religious faith background taught me to love. And that's the main, I guess for me, that's what I picked up in my religious background, is to love people. That's my only job. My job isn't to judge. My job isn't to correct anybody that may, you know, have a differing belief system. That's not what I was taught. I was taught to love people as just number one. And then I guess, and I talk a lot about literature and reading books, and truthfully, that's really where I've pointed to, because I'm not saying that I didn't come out of my childhood or my, even now still, I'm sure there's unconscious bias that I have and sort of judgments that I make that are wrong. And so I guess to me is the idea of to keep learning through listening to people's experiences and just that assigning people, and I said this a little bit earlier, but assigning people their best intentions and look for the best in people. And really, I've just decided, especially in the last few years, I just, even selfishly for my own mental health, I can't go around fearing people. I can't go around fearing what I think might happen, or, you know, this tribalism that we see so much. I don't have a better answer other than there's lots of experiences that I've listened to from people that have sort of shaped the way I feel. And frankly, the way we started this podcast talking about getting proximate, that is one of the biggest things that I internalized in the last several years, is just being able to connect with someone as a fellow human, no matter what their story is, and being open to their story. And this idea that, you might be wrong. Right. I mean, we're so entrenched in the idea that we're right. I tell my kids all the time, do you want to be right or do you want to have a relationship? Like, I'd rather have a relationship than be right. And I just think in this country and sort of our national conversation has just been so binary, and either you're this or you're that, and it's just not the way it is, and we're just losing sight
of each other. We're looking past each other and we're not seeing each other as humans and we're missing out. I mean, had I judged you and said you are not like me.
Right. If you said you drink coffee and we're not going to be friends, look at this beautiful friendship we would have messed up.
Like, how sad is that? Right. And you think about all the people in your life, if you cut out that weren't thinking exactly like you, didn't do, you know, exactly the things you do or believe the way you do. Like, how sad that we could live in a world where we've created the space where we can't look out and connect with people that are different and learn from them. So I don't know. I think it's more fun to live your life that way.
Right. Well, I thank you for being an example to me because of what you've taught me. I really have looked outside of myself to that tribalism. I'm a true blue BYU fan, and every once in a while, I'm even friends with a Ute fan. So, you know, thanks for your example, Abby. We love you.
We even like the Lakers fans sometimes.
Every once in a while.
Oh, Chili, this has been such a blast, and this podcast has been really fun. I hope you've gotten to know my friends better, and I hope you get a little bit of where I'm coming from, and we will continue this conversation, and we will have some amazing people on the pod that we can even get more proximate to. So thank you so much for being with us today. Thanks for being a friend.